Contest of Champions, episode number 25, Psylocke versus Nightcrawler.
Let's get ready to rumble!
Hello again, comic book fans, to the second exciting season of Contest of Champions Live. This is the fifth fight of Season 2 and the 25th episode under our belts since we have gone live. Can you guys believe that? 25 episodes? Crazy.
Seems like we started it yesterday.
I know, really. It does. So thank you to all of you listeners out there and the competitors for helping to make this the premier online comic book game of the century. As always, returning this week as your COC live host with the most is me, the clobbering clergyman Jeff Jackson, and my Canadian friend, the cape killer Ian Johnson.
Hello, hey. Hello.
And joining us this week is one of our two competitors, one of the two Dans, the only guy who purposely cuts bum flats into all his Spider-Man underoos, Mr. Dan Brand.
Howdy, folks.
See, I don't read these things until I'm saying them, and, so I didn't see that. That's good. You doing okay, Dan?
That was
good.
Hey. I'm doing excellent, thanks.
Good, good.
Is that true? Hey, Dan, is that true? Do you cut bum flaps into all your Spider-Man underoos?
Oh, totally. I'm lazy, right? So it just makes things easier.
Nice.
Why not? And the person that we're missing at this moment is our rookie sensation, Daniel Fabrizio, who didn't show up, but hopefully he will make it. I've texted him, and so hopefully he will make it before we get to the fight. And if not, then Dan Brian has kind of an open forum, and we'll have to fill up the rest of the time, I guess. But if Daniel doesn't show up, then he will get a strike. And if you get three strikes, then you're eliminated from the game. So that's just something to keep in mind for all of our competitors out there. So, But everybody doing okay tonight? Everybody doing all right?
Yeah,
I'm fantastic.
Okay.
Just
all right. Cool.
Very in good. In the news. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
Mm. No, go for it.
In the news slot tonight, I thought that it would be fitting for us to give a bit of a shout out to the new AVX series, which dropped this week. This should be huge for the COC Nation fans as we get to see many of the matchups that we've argued about over the past 5 years. Some of the solicits indicate that we will see things like Iron Man versus Magneto and Thing versus Namor in the first issue, and Spider-Man versus Colossus and Captain America versus Gambit in the second issue, which I thought were some pretty interesting matchups, and they'd make some great COC talk for us.
Well, now wait a second. Now there's the main AVX series, and then there's another one called AVX versus, which actually shows the fights in details. Is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's I'm really excited about that, because if it's just straight up one guy versus another guy and let's see who wins, that's exciting. I don't really think that Marvel's going to come up with a clear winner either way with some of these. Do you think they will?
Yeah. I think with some they will, because in the solicits it talked about Spider-Man going against Colossus, and then a little later on in one of the other, you know, tie-in issues, they have Colossus versus Red Hulk. So I think that, you know, I think some of these guys are going to get their asses handed to them. I think some of these guys are going to, they're going to limp off or run away or need to be saved by somebody. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think they're going to be talking this one out. At least I pray that they're not going to be talking this one out, you know?
Yeah. It would be nice to have some definitive winners.
Mm-hmm.
Either way.
Yeah. And it'll be like the Captain America versus Gambit one. That'll be interesting. Because I don't know, for me, Gambit, for the past number of years, he's been kind of portrayed as a bit of a wuss. He's lost his swagger, hey? Really lost his swagger, that guy.
I was just reading his very first appearance. I don't have that issue, but I just bought the new Essential X-Men, and it has the first appearance of Gambit in it, and how he used to throw knives. Like in his first appearance, instead of throwing cards, he threw knives, which to me makes a whole hell of a lot more sense than throwing damn cards, but whatever.
Yeah, it was more like the long shot thing, right? Where he's throwing those dagger kind of things.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some other cool facts that are turning up with this series, with the AVX series, that we've got in this list, it's two, are that Iron Fist somehow figures out that the Phoenix Force is connected to Kunlun and his Iron Fist power, which I thought, that could be an interesting twist to the whole thing. Wolverine, of course, as we knew, this is the smallest surprise of the entire series. Yeah, he's going to be forced to choose a side, of course. But it's the interesting thing is that it's still not clear really which side he's going to choose, which I find to be very interesting. And then, of course, we have Colossus versus Red Hulk, which is always going to be interesting because Colossus is the new juggernaut. And then one surprising thing that I read was that Captain Marvel, Protector, and Miss Marvel at one point in time sounds like they're going to find themselves against the Avengers. So, I'm not sure if this was a misprint or if this is real or not, but I thought, again, that would be a nice surprise, right? Like, because I think there's lots of mutants that people are looking at and saying, I wonder which side they're going to go with. But for the most part, most people are just assuming the Avengers are with the Avengers. I'd love to see a couple of the Avengers splinter off and say, hey, you know what? Avengers, you guys are wrong, and take the side of X-Men. I think that'd be kind of neat.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think this is going to be great. This is going to be great for the COC, that's for sure.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. With the Wolverine thing, I mean, he's got a title called Wolverine and the X-Men. So, I'm pretty sure that what this is going to spell is probably Wolverine's departure from the Avengers. Do you guys think that they... Well, do you think Marvel would actually do that? I mean, Wolverine has been their cash cow for so long. Do you think that they would actually take him off an Avenger team?
I think with the movie coming up, they actually want to disassociate Wolverine with the Avengers as much as they can.
Oh, good point. Yeah.
You know what's interesting? Yeah. Is in X-Men Legacy 266 and 267, She-Hulk, Falcon, and Moon Knight are their job is going to be going to the Jean Grey school to help protect the students. So, even that in itself for me is confusing because I'm like, what does that mean? Is that an Avenger thing or is that them helping the X-Men? Like, what's happening there?
Yeah. Well, I'll just go ahead and say this because Dan and I actually have the first issue of Avengers versus X-Men, even though it hasn't officially been released yet. I know. So, I can kind of see why a little bit. I don't know about you, Dan, but
yeah.
I can see a little bit why some people from the team would go and protect a certain group of mutants here or there or whatever. So I'll just leave it at that. I don't want to spoil anything for anybody. So
okay.
Yeah.
All right. Jeff, are you ready? You ready for my best Lost voice?
Yeah, go for it.
Previously on COC.
That was good. Okay. So that was good. It sounded just like Lost. Last week we saw a fight that you will never ever see in comics, featuring Wonder Man versus Lady Deathstrike at the Peak Space Station. Eli Anthony, who had Wonder Man, focused on Wonder Man tearing Deathstrike limb from limb, while Gid, Infinite Speech, used the environment to his favor, describing how Deathstrike would plug herself into the Peak Station. So you, as the listeners, can go and review all the witty banter that accompanied this fight. And you can go and see all that at comicattack.former.com, which are the formers, which is the forum for comicattack.net, and check out all of the conversation that went on with that, and listen to last week's episode. So, the poll named Wonder Man as the winner, with 73% of the votes. With Lady Deathstrike's 27% of the votes. There were total of 11 votes, and so we give thanks to all of you who came on there and let your opinion be known. That's great. And so now we're gonna give our opinions. And so I guess it's my turn first, huh?
I didn't switch it, so maybe not. Maybe it's my turn.
Okay, you go first.
I didn't switch that at all.
No, actually, I think you went first last time.
Did I? Okay.
I think so. I'll go real quick. I hate to say it because I freaking hate Wonder Man, but Wonder Man wins, and this is why. I think that Lady Deathstrike could get some stabby in. I mean, Wonder Man is not as tangible as people think. But he is. I mean, he's not as intangible as people may think. He is an energy form, but that form is mostly solid. And but here's the thing: he's highly durable. He could heal extremely fast. So even if she did get close enough to him to stab him, I don't think it would be that big of a deal to really. To just blast her or something like that. Mm. And, you know, somebody in the forum, I think it was Tom, mentioned that, you know, the only thing that Deathstrike could do is just cut his head off. But still, I mean, he's faster, he's stronger, he's smarter, he's, you know, Wonder Man has the whole package, and Lady Deathstrike really just doesn't, I'm sorry to say. So while I don't buy Simon's complete intangibility, I still think that he has the power to really take her out, to really destroy her. And some of the things that were most convincing to me were the screenshots that Eli put on the forum of Simon taking apart Ultron, who is made of adamantium. And now I don't know all the context of what was going on in that comic, but that was a really good convincer for me. I mean, that shows his power. That shows how what he would do against a robotic opponent. Gid's rationale of Lady Deathstrike using the Peak against Simon might work, but to me, that's really inconclusive. I mean, I don't see Lady Deathstrike doing that a lot. I don't see how we don't know if the Peak would be able to contain a being like Simon. So. I just think that's kind of it's just an inconclusive argument, really. So, so that's where I stand. What do you think, Ian?
Yeah, good. I think this is another. I think Infinite Speech becomes a bit of a victim here of the Iron Man cap, and I've been thinking a lot about this lately. And I think the Iron Man cap is a strange cap. It's not quite as cut and clear. As some other caps might be, because I think Iron Man, a lot of people probably tend to look at Iron Man, they look at his power, they look at his defensive powers, his offensive powers, they look at his intelligence, they look at things like that, and what they fail to recognize is that the way that I ran this cap for who was over and who was under, it was based on, you know, Iron Man's capabilities, and with his armor gives him some interesting advantages over a lot of characters. And I'll be honest, personally, through the draft, I didn't see a lot of people draft considering that. Do you know what I mean? Considering the way Iron Man can deal with some of these characters. So when you have Lady Deathstrike dealing with Wonder Man, it's very different from Iron Man dealing with Wonder Man. And Lady Deathstrike's a great character, but she just doesn't have the same defenses to deal with a character like Wonder Man as, you know, as she does herself. And also it was poor timing too, because, you know, at the time of the draft, that very week, Iron Man took down Wonder Man. You know what I mean? And some people would say, well, you know, Wonder Man led him and all this kind of stuff like that. Well, regardless of how you want to play it out, Iron Man took down Wonder Man that week, you know? So, you know, it was we had a bit of a discussion during the draft because we weren't sure if we were going to allow Wonder Man, but ultimately we decided, yeah, you know what, we're going to let him because Iron Man beat him. So at first I thought Wonder Man just tears her limb from limb and pounds her. And then when I read this week's Secret Avengers, it actually changed my mind quite a bit. And it brought this fight to me to be almost head to head. And it wasn't so much of what you were physically seeing with the fight. It was more what Captain Britain and Lady Deathstrike were fighting. It was more what Captain Britain was saying. And he was given a play-by-play of basically how he can't beat Lady Deathstrike. She's too fast. She attacks with surgical precision. He said straight up he can't beat her in the speed department. And he's really, like, if you were to look at two characters that I think are really evenly matched, I'd say Wonder Man and Captain Britain, they're a pretty good match, you know? So when I saw that, I was like, oh, wow, you know, Lady Deathstrike, she's taking it to him. And the only thing Captain Britain could do to help was he basically took her and threw her into a different part of the city. And in the Peak Station, well, Wonder Man can't do that. He can't take her and throw her into a different part of the city. So that swayed me for a little bit, and I really do think it's a close fight. I think it's a very close fight, but ultimately I think that Wonder Man can dish out more punishment than Lady Deathstrike can handle. And I think that, you know, if they get together and they start going at it with each other, I think that she's going to receive more damage, more stopping damage than Wonder Man will. So I think she's going to stop first, and you know, because she'll probably be in little pieces all over the floor, still operating and still moving around stuff because of what she is. But
right.
I would consider right. that subdued. So I'm with Wonder Man too, unfortunately for Gid.
All right, so that's three votes for Wonder Man and none for Lady Deathstrike. So Wonder Man is the winner, which puts Eli at the head of the pack, folks. He is 2-0. In the game so far, and that puts Gid at the bottom of the stack at 0-2. At least Tom has experienced both a win and a loss, and Dan Brian has one win under his belt, and hopefully is going for a two-run winning streak. And Daniel has one loss under his belt already, and is hoping for his first win in the game. So that's where we are in the standings. So, to learn more about the COC, of course, you can go back and listen to the live draft, or to the previous episodes. And you can go back to comicattack.former.com and look up in the forum appropriately titled COC. Do we have a question?
We do. We have a question from one of my favorite listeners, someone who's been with us right from the beginning, ever since we went live, which always, you know, made me feel good, named Moses. And he asked, Who do we believe are the top 11 smartest characters in the Marvel 616 universe? And, you know, much like COC, where we decide who's going to beat who up in a fight, this is a great question, but it, you know, has nothing to do with fists and everything to do with minds.
Yeah.
So I don't know, Jeff, did you want to do this, or you want me to go first, or?
I'll just toss mine out because. And I'm interested to hear what you have to say, though. These are not in any particular order, but I would just throw these guys into the top 11. You have to put Reed Richards, Mr. Fantastic of the Fantastic Four, in there. Hank Pym, Ant-Man, Hank McCoy, the Beast, I think, and especially recently in Secret Avengers, I think he continues to show that he is right up there with the big wigs. I also have to put Professor Xavier. I think he's one of the top minds. Mr. Sinister, just because that guy is crazy. Edgar Windom, who is also known as the High Evolutionary. Tony Stark, Iron Man, the Incredible Hulk, Bruce Banner. I'm also putting Peter Parker on there just out of just because he's never included in one of these lists, and especially now as he's actually got a job at Horizon Labs and he's actually using his mind more and he's being an inventor and he's doing that. I would definitely put Spider-Man in the top 11 now, and Victor Von Doom, Doctor Doom, and the Black Panther, Chala, I will put him in the top 11. So that's really my. They're in no particular order. So, what do you think?
Yeah, no, you're going to be surprised. Your list is very similar to mine, very similar. To begin with, though, I kind of thought that this question was a bit of a loaded question, and I'm assuming that Moses is referring to more mainstream human/mutant characters, right?
Yeah.
Because in all honesty, like celestial characters like the Living Tribunal and Uatu and the Supreme Intelligence and all those guys, they outstrip anybody.
I almost put the Watcher on my list just to see what you guys are going to say.
yeah. So I basically left those celestial kind of characters off. The other one that I found confusing to try and – I put a lot of time into my list, believe it or not. Did a lot of research for it and stuff like that because I thought the question was awesome.
Yeah, that's a good question.
But – the other one is artificial intelligence characters, right? Mm. Like when you've got characters like Vision and Jocasta and those kind of people.
Ultron,
do you know what I mean? Like they basically have all the knowledge of their creators. So you got a guy like Hank Pym who created Jocasta or Ultron who ultimately created Vision. You know, they probably have everything he has as well. But anyway, so I didn't include them either because I thought, it's like cheating almost, you know what I mean? So I thought I won't include those.
Right.
My list, I actually put in order from 1 to 11.
Okay.
So this is the exact order that I would put them in. Reed Richards first. You know, what can you say? He's Reed Richards, right? And he's first. Number two, I put Hank Pym, which I think a lot of people might argue with, but I think he's really underrated. And the thing that I like about Pym is that – well, here, let me say this. I didn't put Banner on my list at all. And the reason I didn't put Bruce Banner on my list is because everyone talks about how smart he is, but he does nothing science-wise. Like, he maybe did a long, 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 long time ago, but he doesn't anymore. You know what I mean? Like, he does nothing science-wise. They just say how smart he is, whereas if you look at a guy like Pym, he's actually inventing things every single day, like pocket universes and, like, infinite...
But the difference between Pym and Banner is that Pym doesn't have a raging monster inside of him that he has to keep in control. I mean, that's the difference. I mean, Banner would be able to do more with his science if he wasn't the Hulk.
Well, he has, though.
What's that?
Damn. Well, he has because at that point about last year where he couldn't turn into Hulk anymore. Remember, he was training Scar to face the Hulk.
All right.
Banner had all these crazy inventions and this big, master plan for. Yeah, he seemed to have a plan for everything. And currently, now in the current Incredible Hulk, Banner and Hulk are separated, and basically Banner's got his own little island of Dr. Moreau going, where he's performing all these science and gamma experiments on all these creatures, making these Hulk gorillas and snakes and monkeys and whole bunch of different stuff, and he's got all these shields and all these guns and bombs that he unleashes on Hulk when they fight. Anyway, so he's shown recently that he's still an inventor and he's still a scientist, and it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. See, I still can't, for me, Banner is he's basically 70% of the superhero population are PhD genius level scientists. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
And I think Banner's one of them. You know what I mean? Like, I don't see him as special. Anyway, and I know most people would argue with me, but I would actually argue that one right to my grave. I think Pym's super, super underrated. And like I said, he's current, like, the new stuff that he's invented is freaking awesome. Like the Infinite Mansion, the Infinite Avengers Mansion, where it just goes on for infinity,
yeah.
and it has infinity number of rooms and stuff like that. Just wicked stuff. Folding pocket realities and things, just cool stuff. Number three I put is Tony Stark. And I think Tony's just, he's amazing as a futurist and an engineer. The stuff that he can build is incredible. You know what I mean? Like he's just, he's absolutely amazing. And when you see him in, they even take him and they put him in Age of Apocalypse and things like that as a human, but such a high level genius intellect that they allow him to exist in Age of Apocalypse. You know what I mean? Like, I think that's saying something. Dr. Doom, I put as number four. Science, I put him because he's got a really cool science and magic blend knowledge. Do you know what I mean? Where
yeah.
he blurs yeah. the lines between science and magic, right? And he's got a really good understanding of both. Number six, I put as Mr. Sinister. I love Sinister. You know, the dude's a physicist, a geneticist, a biologist. Like, he's just... And no matter how evil he is, he's always about advancement, right? It's always going forward, going forward, right. going forward for all the wrong ideas, all the wrong reasons. But, you know, number seven I put as Doctor Strange. And the reason I put Doctor Strange is I think he's got a different kind of knowledge to him in terms of the world of mysticism and magic and stuff like that. I think he's unparalleled. I know he's not officially the Sorcerer Supreme anymore, but he's still nobody on the 616 has more knowledge of mysticism than he does. Nobody. You know what I mean? Like he's got these giant books of spells and stuff like that. He doesn't carry the books with him. He just rhymes them off, right? So anyway, I liked him at seven. Number eight, I think this is going to be one of my sort of my surprise picks. I picked Dr. Nemesis.
I forgot about Nemesis. That's a great pick.
Yeah, and I love Nemesis because he's just all around awesome. You know what I mean? Like he's And basically, I almost see him as the guy who replaced Henry McCoy. Like, he basically replaced the Beast as the top scientist with the X-Men. You know what I mean? And you know, he's cool because he does all this science stuff as he fights and on the go and stuff like that. I love Nemesis. Number nine, I picked High Evolutionary, unparalleled geneticist. Number 10, here's another one that I didn't see on many lists. I picked Kang, the Conqueror. And not because he's so smart, but just because he has the exposure to so much future technology and engineering, you know, he's like Tony Stark from the future. You know what I mean? So
right.
he's been exposed to so much that he just got a good understanding of stuff that, you know, current 616 guys don't. And then number 11, I put as T'Challa. And the reason why I like Black Panther there is the thing that always impressed me with him is that he completely developed Wakanda and the tech that they have, which is, you know, which is far greater than anything in the Western world. And that was in complete isolation, with no input from anybody from the Western society or anybody at all. And he developed it all himself. So my honorable mention was McCoy, was Beast.
Well, I was going to say that's, you only named 10.
Did I?
Reed, Pym, Stark, Doom, Sinister, Strange, Nemesis, High Evolutionary, Kang, T'Challa.
Yeah, so McCoy's my 11th then.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. That's great.
So our lists were pretty good.
So no Xavier, huh?
No. Man. If they would have left Xavier where he was, I don't know, early 90s-ish?
Yeah.
I would have picked Xavier. But I don't know. He's another one, right? Like
Well, he's not in any books right now, so yeah, the way that he's been treated in the last 5 years has been...
Yeah, he's just taking a back seat, you know what I mean? And I don't think he should. I think I hate the way that he's being treated in books right now, to tell you the truth. The fact that Scott even talks down to him at all...
Yeah.
I think I'd love to see Xavier just stand up and slap him across the face, you know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. But yeah, you know, the old Xavier, he's on that list. This current Xavier, I don't know, I can't find a spot for him.
I hear that. That's good. That's good. Dan, do you have a list you want to share with us?
I had posted it quickly, you know, just ones that were coming to mind and stuff. But I tend to agree with a lot of the, you know, both of your lists. The only one that I'm surprised that is on neither of your lists is Dr. Octopus. To me, he's, you know, I'd put him in front of T'Challa, but...
Well, the only reason I've considered him, but the fact that he he always gets bested, brains and brawn, by Spider-Man. It just didn't put him in the top 11 for me. I mean, yeah, he might be in the top 15 or 20, but the fact that, you know, Spider-Man is always beating him, or and usually is beating him mind to mind rather than, physically.
Exactly. Yeah, I guess you're right. He throws a wrench into his plans all the time, right, even though he's a master planner.
Yeah.
The thing that dropped Otto for me was in the recent Invincible Iron Man books, he came to Tony Stark to try and get Tony to help come up with a plan that would help Otto from dying, because Otto's dying right now from like a brain tumor or something that, I guess. Right. So he actually came to Tony and said, and he strapped like a nuclear bomb to his chest and said, "I'm going to blow up all of Manhattan if you don't come up with something to save me." And to me, that was like, oh, are you serious? You're pathetic, dude. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I thought you're this super genius. You're going to Stark? Like, he's an engineer. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know.
Yeah, that's funny. I didn't know that. See, what had bumped him up for me is when he fought the intelligentsia. Those bad guys.
You said that well.
is that how it's said? Anyways,
it is. Yeah.
When he fought those guys and he bested MODOK and basically all of them. Right, they're all like the smartest villains in the world, and he just railroaded them.
Yeah, that was kind of cool. That definitely put him at the top of the villains, or near the top of the villains list. I mean, but I liked what you said about Doom, Ian, because I think that's really true. And I also liked your inclusion of Doctor Strange, because I wasn't thinking in terms of magic, but that's really good. I mean, that's really true of Strange. His knowledge, you know, far exceeds anybody else's in that realm. So,
mm-hmm.
So yeah, that's good.
Great question.
Yeah, it was a great question. I stumbled upon one list online that was really awesome, because what it did was it broke those categories down into specific skills, and they actually had Kingpin as the top of one in terms of finances. Mm. They had Matt Murdock in there for law. You know what I mean? Like they said you have to look at it in terms of disciplines. And then they broke it down in terms of disciplines, and I was like, oh, wow, that's kind of neat. You know, like, they had Shang-Chi in there for Kung Fu.
Right. Yeah.
So, it's a great question. Wow, super good question.
They had Lockjaw in there for teleportation.
Yeah, for slobbering.
Yeah, and slobbering and teleportation, both at the same time. Yeah.
Apocalypse for sad face.
Yeah.
Actually, Apocalypse made quite a few. He didn't. Never mind. You know who? I was sorry. Thanos.
Yeah.
Or,
Thanos. Yeah.
Thanos.
He made quite a few lists that I checked too, which I wouldn't put them on mine, but whatever.
Right.
So yeah, but great question. All right. So, but before we get on to our fight, I know everyone's chomping at the bit to get to our fight. One of the things we like to do on our little show here is, in keeping with the whole idea of the superheroes fighting each other, we like to choose one fight from this week's comics that we consider to be our highlight fight of the week. Jeff, did you want to go first?
Yeah, I'll go first. My fight of the week comes from American Vampire number 25, which this whole arc has been nothing but one long fight. And it has been between this new character, Travis Kidd, who is a vampire hunter. This arc takes place in the 50s. And so Travis Kidd is your typical James Dean kind of greaser, teenage guy. But he happens to be a vampire hunter. And he has been hunting Skinner Sweet, who is kind of the central vampire character in American Vampire. And so they've really been racing each other in a death race for this whole arc, and have done some really just crazy out there, you know, fighting on the top of moving cars and all that kind of stuff, which is so, you know, we'd never be able to, it's not realistic, but, you know, that's what makes comic books so much fun. So, but in this one, what I loved was they finally get out, and they're actually, the two of them are duking it out, and Travis wants to kill Skinner before the sun rises, because Skinner is most powerful during the sunlight, because he's an American vampire, and American vampires are immune to the effects of the sun, and so he is so the sun starts to rise and Skinner starts getting more and more powerful, and they, you know, they start going at it and whatever, and Skinner at one point grabs Travis and bites him square on the neck, and so they start, you know, he like stumbles back, and then all of a sudden Skinner starts feeling really weird, and Travis, you know, says that earlier in the day he had taken some gold dust and ingested it, I guess, and it had gotten into his bloodstream, and American vampires are allergic or you know, gold is deadly to them, and so when Skinner bites down on Travis, he gets this gold dust inside of him, and it's enough to put Skinner down, and so it was just a brilliant way to take down this villainous character, and just that whole issue was really fantastic. So did you guys read that?
No.
Yeah, I used to get American Vampire, and then it's one of the books I dropped. And, yeah. And not even because it was bad, to tell you the truth. I don't know why I dropped it. I don't know, I just did.
Well, that's how it's coming for me too. I mean, I'm having to pull back on a couple things, and I think American Vampire is one of the things that go, even though it's a good book. Mm-hmm. But I just can't afford all the good books. So I'm gonna probably drop it pretty soon here. But it was a great fight, really good fight.
How long, Jeff, do you think until there's an American Vampire movie?
Well, I mean, this arc was really cinematic in a lot of ways, because it took everything that's great about those classic like Rebel Without a Cause kind of movies, but then twisted in the horror of the vampire genre in it, and it could, this arc could have been a really fantastic movie. You wouldn't even have had to have known what the backstory of Skinner was previous to this. I mean, this arc really stands well on its own, and I think I think if anybody out there, if you just want to pick up a good book, pick up this arc. I think it's called Death Race in Trade, and I think you'd be pleased, because it's just a really it's a good contained. You understand all the characters in this arc. You don't really have to know a lot of the history, even though those of us who have been reading it for a long time, there's a lot of things that happen that you're like, oh wow. And how it connects to the longer American Vampire story. It's pretty cool. How about you, Dan?
Yeah.
For me, I picked something actually not, I wouldn't really classify it as a fight, but more of a moment, in X-Men Legacy 264, which was actually a really good issue. So have you guys read it? I assume you've read it.
Oh yeah, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. The art's really good. Anyways, so Mimic and Weapon Omega sort of crash land at the feet of the X-Men while Rogue and Cannonball are out patrolling. They're at the school, isn't it? At the school.
Yep, they are.
I'm trying to remember. They're at the school.
Yeah.
Okay. The school. So they're patrolling the grounds, and Mimic and Weapon Omega come crashing down, and finally Weapon Omega sort of regains consciousness and feels all the mutant students around him, and it's like a drug to him. So the part I like the most, the moment that was for me, is when we switch pages and we see Jonathan Starsmore, aka Chamber. He's teaching a class to all basically the freakier mutants, right? Telling him about how, you know, because of the way they look, they may or may not ever get to love anyone, or may not ever get loved. And anyways, so it was a nice moment, because I hadn't seen Chamber in a long time, and I was a big Generation X fan, so I kind of missed that character, especially just seeing him, I got instantly nostalgic. And the next panel shows Weapon Omega crashing through the wall, basically. And he's like, oh my God, you know, more, please. He's totally getting high off all the mutant energy. And basically, you know, cool as anyone could be, Jono is just like, only because you said please, out of my class. And he shoots this big psionic blast at him and just sends him flying right back out the classroom. It's just this one moment, this one punch, basically, and just sends Weapon Omega right back into Cannonball and Rogue's arms. So I thought that was just a good moment.
For me, there is no more perfect X-Men comic book than one that includes the Mimic, Chamber, and Cannonball all in one issue. Those are three of – I mean, the only thing that would make it better is if Jamie Madrox had been in it. I mean, that would have just sent me, like, you know, to another realm. But those are three of my top X-Men characters, and to see them all in one issue was just – ah, it was fantastic. Loved it.
Yeah. It's a great highlight issue for Rogue as well. Not that I've been reading – so I guess it's mostly all about Rogue and Legacy, but it highlighted Rogue quite well in this issue as well.
Yeah.
Now, I'm getting old, right? So I tend to forget things quite easy now. How did Chamber get his powers back?
there is a reason, but I'm trying to remember what it was.
Well, didn't he turn into like this, you know, Apocalypse Sun or something at some point?
Oh, and... I know what it was. It was Age of X. When Age of X happened... he was basically the Apocalypse, you know, thing. And after the Clan Akaba had changed him, and then he was in the New Warriors for a little while and all that. But in Age of X, he had gone back to Utopia, and then during Age of X, it changed him. And you know, some of the changes of Age of X ended up carrying over, like.
Frenzy and Hellion.
Like Frenzy and Hellion and their hand, and, you know, Hellion's hands and all that stuff. And so that's how he ended up. And there's one panel at the end of Age of X where it's all reverted back, and he basically looks down and he's got his powers. But it was one little panel that showed Chamber that he had gotten his powers back. So
okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must have missed that, cuz that was a great scene. I love that scene. Especially when he says, you know, only because you say please. But the whole time I was thinking, I was like, Chamber got his powers back? I thought he was just some dude with a hole in his chest now ever since House of M. Like, I forgot. I didn't realize what was going on there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. No, Jono's a cool character. No question about it.
Yep.
No question about it. So for me, my fight of the week is from Avengers 24.1. One of the point issues, and anybody who knows me would know it wouldn't take much for me to pick this as my fight of the week. One of my favorite, absolute favorite characters in Marvel lore is Vision.
Not that you're biased in this game at all.
No. And I'm glad you said that. I pride myself on being very fair with all this kind of stuff. So, you know, when Vision fights, you can be rest assured. The only problem with when Vision fights is that everyone can know that I have every appearance that Vision's ever appeared in comics.
And what if he fights Wolverine? What are you going to do then?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I can tell you right now if you want. but I won't. So what happens is Vision... you know, Vision just recently has been kind of brought back to the Avengers, and, you know, they're slowly healing him and trying to rebuild him, kind of stuff like that. And so piece by piece, he's being filled in on what happened to him. And I love this kind of stuff, because for me, this is the kind of stuff, this is the kind of continuity stuff that where I look at it and I think, okay, these guys, they got this really well planned out, because they're referring to and referencing stories from, you know, 10, 12 years ago. And they work it into this book like as though they planned it 12 years ago, you know? And I love that. So they're filling Vision in, and he's starting to piece together, starting with when Jennifer Walters ripped him in half during Avengers Disassembled. And, you know, he's trying to figure out what's going on, and people explain him, because he wanted to go and kick She-Hulk's ass. That was the whole thing. And someone said to him, "Oh no, you know, it's not She-Hulk." You know, and they were reluctant. I think it was I was Tony Stark actually, and he was reluctant. He said it wasn't She-Hulk. It was Wanda. You know, I hate to tell you, your wife. She's the one who she took control of She-Hulk and took control of you, and it was all this kind of stuff like that. And he's saying, you know, to Tony, "Where's Wanda? I want Wanda. Where's Wanda?" And Tony said, "I don't know. I don't know where Wanda is." Right. And then Tony let slip Magneto's name. And then Vision said, "I'm going to go ask Magneto." So Vision shows up on Utopia to Magneto. And he starts off by all he hears is voice, and it says, "Hello, Father." And so, of course, Magneto takes huge offense to that. You know, and he says, "You know, I never gave you permission to call me Father." Robot, and you know, then he says, "I'm not a robot, you know, I'm not a robot," and they back and forth verbally bantering back and forth, and it's getting heated. And basically Magneto tells him, you know, he says, "You know, I'm the master of magnetism. You need to run out of here as quick as you can, because I'm going to ruin you in 5 seconds if you don't get out of here." And then Vision says, "Oh yeah," and he goes intangible and puts his hand inside his chest and grabs his heart while he's intangible. And he says, "You know what? You could, you're right. You could probably tear me apart in like 3 seconds. But the only problem is that when you do, I go tangible and I'm holding your heart. And you know, I'm gonna rip it from your chest." And so all the X-Men are standing there like, "What are we gonna do here? This is, you know," and some of them are like, "This is a family issue and stuff like that, and don't get involved." Finally, Magneto talks him down, and you know, Vision takes his hand out of his chest. And then Magneto looks at him. He's like, "You know what? You know, I could destroy you right now. You know that, right?" And you can see that Magneto's huge. He's not even offended by the fact that he could have just killed him. He's offended that somebody would even dare touch him. You know what I mean? And so he grabs Vision without grabbing him, but just with his powers. And he takes Vision and he launches him somewhere else into San Francisco, which I thought was awesome. I love when characters get thrown from, like, you know, one state to the next. It was great. It was a great little, you know, very tense. I personally found a very intense couple of, you know, 4 or 5 pages where I was like, "Oh, this is freaking awesome." You know what I mean? Like, he's gonna rip Magneto's heart out, man. So yeah, that was definitely my fight of the week.
And they didn't really solicit it as part of Avengers versus X-Men, but I mean, it really was. I mean, if you really should read that, especially if you read what was going on in Avengers versus X-Men number 0 with the Scarlet Witch story and Vision and all that. You need to read that .1 issue first, because it has a lot to do with where Vision is in his head about Wanda. So
good stuff. It's a great issue. Really nice little issue.
Yeah,
by Bendis, and drawn by Peterson, I believe.
Yeah, Brandon Peterson. Yeah.
Yeah.
Good stuff. All right. Well, now on to the main event. Tonight's fight features Psylocke, managed by Daniel Fabrizio, who's not here, versus the Age of Apocalypse version of Nightcrawler, who's now in the 616 universe, and so was able to be drafted by Dan Briand. And Dan is scheduled as the home team and determined that tonight's fight will take place at Neverland, which is a former concentration camp for mutants. And it first appeared in comics back in 2002. So again, you can go to comicattack.former.com to learn all about the fighters and their powers and the environment, and check all that stuff out.
Good. So listen carefully to this podcast. Normally, we would have both competitors giving their rationales, kind of point counterpoint, and all the voting rules and game information. We'll talk about that a little bit after the fight, after the actual rationale itself. Now, normally, what's traditional right now is we do a little coin toss with a good old Canadian coin to determine who's going to go first with the rationale. But of course, with the only one of the two Dans being here, we have to go with Daniel Briand's rationale first. So he'll come out, give his rationale, and I guess we'll just move on to the rest of the podcast, eh, Jeff?
Yeah, sounds good.
Excellent. So I guess I should go.
Yeah, go for it.
I'm going. All right. Are you ready? It's story time with Dan Briand. So, you know, warm up a hot chocolate, have a seat, get comfy. We're going to listen to a story.
put on your buttless PJs.
Your underoos.
Yeah. I'm gonna get a sweater. It's starting to cool down here.
All right, so here we go. Picture this opening panel is a wide shot of the abandoned Neverland mutant concentration camp. It's silent. It's dark. Inside the main building, a flash of light and the faint smell of brimstone fills the air. The outline of an elvish man could be seen for a split second, but as the light fades, the silhouette returns to the shadows. Kurt Darkholm has appeared in the environment, which is to be the stage for his battle against his X-Force team member, Psylocke. Elsewhere in the building, the shimmer of a katana blade can be seen as the moonlight shines through a window. Psylocke is also hiding in the shadows. Using her telepathic abilities, she tries to locate her opponent, but can't quite get a hold on him. The mess hall. No. The administration office. No. The detention area. No. The infirmary. No. Behind her. Kling. Sparks fly as blades meet. Nightcrawler ambushes Psylocke with his use of teleportation and the shadows. The combatants sword play for a few seconds before another flash of brimstone fills Psylocke's nostrils. Silence. Is he still here? Can she afford to use her telepathic powers at this instant, or should she dedicate 100% of her attention to her immediate surroundings? Asking the question itself proves to be distraction enough, as another flash is heard, and a three-fingered hand grasps the female ninja's wrist. Surprised, Psylocke gets a glimpse of yellow pupils above smiling white fangs, casting a wink. Bamf! Psylocke screams. A stream of blood shoots from a stump where her right hand and katana blade used to be. Oh. She looks up. The blade is embedded into the ceiling. Her hand remains gripped to the hilt. This version of Nightcrawler is cruel, cunning, and merciless. Having been raised by his mother Mystique to fight for survival his entire life, Kurt Darkholm instinctively attacks to harm and disable his opponents. Having teleported Dead Man Wade's head off his body before, he knows that teleporting any piece of human anatomy can gain him the advantage he needs. Psylocke composes herself and lashes out. A psychic blast hits Kurt. Bamf, bamf, leg sweep. Betsy leaps and bicycle kicks Nightcrawler in the chin. Dazed momentarily, he falls. He opens his eyes just in time to see a glowing fist with a psychic blade heading for his head. No time to think. He must react and end this. Bamf! Nightcrawler teleports to the ceiling above, grabs Psylocke's katana with his prehensile tail, and teleports again. Brimstone and smoke fill the room as Nightcrawler goes into a frenzy, until finally appearing next to Psylocke, sabers in each hand and her katana in his tail. She stands no chance. Swipe, swipe, stab, bamf! All that is left, as the smoke fades, is a bloody torso on the ground. Head and right hand are missing. Left leg and left arm rest a few feet away in their own puddles of blood. A final squirt of blood shoots out the side of Betsy's breast as her own katana stands upright and impaling her heart.
God! Did you say her breast just bled?
Yes.
A squirt of blood came out of her boob?
Well, where the sword is, its swords impaled into her heart, right?
Right. Oh, man.
If we were together in a room right now on video, I'd be doing that. I don't know how familiar you guys are with basketball, but I don't know if you remember when Vince Carter won the slam dunk competition, and then he does this famous thing with his hands where he does this dunk, and it's like the most amazing dunk you've ever seen, and he's just doing this thing where he's like, it's over. This is over. This competition is over. And that's what I'd be doing right now if we were all in the room together.
Yeah.
That was wow. That was awesome.
That was awesome. I want to see that. I want to see that fight in print. That is great. Maybe we'll send this to Rick Remender, and maybe he'll get a good idea for an upcoming issue of Uncanny X-Force, because that was fantastic.
I think I know what happened here. I think Dan sent his rationale. He sent an advance copy to Fabrizio, earlier this week, and that's why he didn't show up tonight. He's like, "What?"
I think so. Well, okay, so just for the sake of argument, and I'm not necessarily saying that this is against your argument, but mm-hmm. The thing that's going to come up in the forums is Psylocke just immediately shuts down his head. So,
of course,
you know,
the go-to argument for any telepath.
For all telepaths. So, you know, what do you say to that?
What do I say to that? Well, I think, like I said, I had shown I had shown in my rationale that I think if Nightcrawler can stay on the move, she can't quite locate him, not enough to, you know, she has to sort of find him and then shut him down, right? But if he's bamfing all over the place, if that's even a verb, I don't think she can pinpoint him fast enough to shut him down before he gets to her, you know, to gain her attention using her own physicality instead of relying on, because when you get into close combat with Psylocke, that's when she typically stops with the telepathy and tries to use her, you know, her psychic blade or her own blade and her own physicality. So,
well, here's the other question that I have is, when Kurt is teleporting, can telepaths pick up on his mind, you know, or because he's actually jaunting in between
dimensions.
I don't know if a telepath actually zero in on him?
See, I assume that the telepathic link gets broken or disconnected whenever he teleports and can't reappear until he reappears. So I believe this is what gives him the edge, where, you know, she'd have to be pretty damn fast to locate and shut him down before he teleports again and the link is broken and she has to start over again with that.
Well, and let's be honest, telepathically she has to find him, right?
It's not like
when he reappears, he reappears in her mind. She has to, like, you know, that's why they put their fingers to their forehead kind of thing. It takes some concentration to locate things in people, right? So I think when he's popping in and out, she's got to find him.
Well, right. And every time that he pops in and out, she's got to find him.
Mm-hmm. Hmm.
Interesting. That's very interesting. Well, I have a lot to think about this week as we move forward with this.
And so, what I was typing there too is she doesn't know this Nightcrawler, right? Like, so
no.
The old Kurt Wagner, it might be a little easier for her to pick up on, you know, because she knew him, right? She knew him well. She doesn't know this Kurt, that he's going to have different things in his head and different experiences and different, you know, it's almost like trying to find a stranger, right?
Well, plus, even though they're on the same team, they have barely spent any time together. Because right after the Dark Angel saga, where Nightcrawler joined the team, then they immediately, well, she was mourning because of Warren, and then the next instance, they're in Otherworld, and is that the name of it? Otherworld, is that right?
Yeah, I think so.
And she was off with Phantom X doing his thing, and Nightcrawler was with Wolverine and Deadpool doing their thing, and so they actually haven't spent much time together. So. That's another good point. I hadn't thought of that. So,
well, it's too bad that Daniel's not here, because I'd love to hear what he had to say. You know, I'm sure he drafted Psylocke, so I'm sure he's got big things in mind for
mm-hmm.
this competition. So hopefully we can get him on the forums and get him typing up some pretty good rationales to go along with Daniel's brilliantly crafted script.
Yeah, that was really. Really, really good. So,
yeah.
For those of you who are listening and want to vote on the forums, it's important for everybody to know that the circumstances under which this fight is taking place, the fighters are teleported into the respective environment on opposite ends of the environment, and fighters have full disposal of any and all resources available in the environment. For instance, last week, Gid really played up that angle with Lady Deathstrike taking control of the peak. So fighters are not allowed to leave an environment, but teleportation and flyers are not considered as leaving the environment. So even though Nightcrawler is teleporting away, that's part of his power. So, you know, he wouldn't be able to be used. Teleporters wouldn't be able to be used in the game if we were hardcore about that rule about leaving an environment. So, but we're kind of thinking that he teleports within the environment itself. So, and finally, the winner will be determined based on the fact that he or she has subdued the opponent's fighter. So, subduing can be anything from restraining to killing, or ripping apart, or having blood shoot out of a boob, or something like that. So, that would be that would definitely be considered a subduing. So, so next week we are going to be joined once again by the fever-stricken Infinite Speech, and we hope he gets well this week. And he'll be taking on Tom McNeely. And Gid gets to choose the environment because he is the home team. And like I said before, he has not won one yet, so he's really looking for a win. And just so everybody remembers, he still has Iron Fist, Mandarin, and Rock Slide on his team. And Tom has Iceman, Namor, and She-Hulk. So you could get some really fantastic fights here. Imagine a Mandarin versus Namor or Rockslide versus Iceman. What would happen? Iceman versus Rockslide. That would I don't know. She-Hulk. Yeah, She-Hulk versus Iron Fist. I mean, any of these would be really, really fantastic. So, so that's what's coming up in a future episode of COC Live.
Good, exciting. This season, we introduced a new segment to our show called the COC Power Rankings.
Power rankings.
Nice.
Yeah.
Where Jeff and myself take it upon ourselves to rank five new characters each week, in terms of who we believe to be the toughest of those five, in terms of a fight, like a COC fight. If you'd like to submit a character to be ranked, or you just want to yell at us about how ridiculous our choices are, log in at comicattack.former.com and tell us what you think in the COC thread labeled Power Rankings.
Power Rankings.
Tonight's five nominees for our Power Rankings are Magneto, Exodus, Mr. Sinister, Scarlet Witch, and Doctor Strange.
All right. Am I first? I think so.
Yeah, cause... I should go first. Now, I don't have, Jeff, your updated overall power rankings.
Oh, okay.
So I don't know how you want to insert these guys or not. I mean, for me, it's pretty...
Let me look real quick. I want to say that... Well, pretty much, I'll go ahead and say my overall rankings, all of these characters are at the top of the list.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too. Okay.
Okay, so...
You just do your five, and then we'll go from there.
Yeah, okay, sounds good. Okay, so starting at the top of the list and moving down, I have Sinister, Magneto, Exodus, Doctor Strange, Scarlet Witch. Okay, and here's why.
Wow.
Yeah. I didn't think that this was as hard. Some people were like, ooh, this one's going to be hard, but I this one just came right to me, and I have some pretty good reasons why. Number one, even though in the horribly written beginning of the new Uncanny X-Men series by Kieran Gillen, Mr. Sinister is just amazingly powerful. Good God. I mean, even if you subdue him by shooting him, he will immediately recreate a body elsewhere. So he is that smart. He has that much control over his body. Now, also, he has got telepathy. He can teleport. He can shapeshift. I mean, he's got the whole package. As I was looking over his power set, I was like, oh my God, like, this guy has got everything. Plus, he's brilliant. And the other thing is, with this overall list, I looked at the number of times that these folks have appeared and how it has taken an entire team to take just one of them down. And even when they some of these folks are taken down, they immediately crop up somewhere else. And Sinister is one of those people who just, even if you subdue him momentarily, he'll just retreat and he'll disappear and then plot another scheme. So I don't see how you can really, how anybody much can really do much to subdue him and take him down. Now, so he's way up at the list, on the top of the list for me. Magneto I put second, and the reason I ranked him lower than Sinister is because Magneto was on the team of X-Men that tried to take down Sinister, and even though he was distracted, Magneto was doing something else with the team. He was Magneto was focused on the Celestial Head that Sinister was controlling, but But still, if Magneto could take down Sinister, Scott would have just said, okay, Magneto, take down Sinister, and that would have been the end of it. But it really, I mean, Magneto's just not as powerful as Sinister. Magneto has got the brilliance, but he's also, he is resistant to telepathy, and that's why I ranked him above Exodus, both with his helmet, but also in his strength of will. He has trained himself to be resistant to telepathy, even without his helmet. His helmet helps, but his will is so strong that even against major telepaths, I mean, like Rachel Gray, Emma Frost, Psylocke, he can't be taken down telepathically. Now, I would say that some telepaths like Xavier probably could get into his mind because they've worked with him enough and all that, but with the helmet on, he is virtually impossible to get telepathically, and that puts him above Exodus. Exodus is supremely powerful, and that's evident by what was going on in X-Men Legacy recently. It took a whole team of X-Men plus a few of the kids from Utopia to come in and take him down. But there again, those weren't the heaviest hitters of the X-Men group, and they took him down. I mean, it took a few issues to take him down, but eventually, with the kids and the X-Men Wolverine's team, they ended up taking him down. But still, I mean, Exodus I think is supremely powerful. And if in the last game of COC, if Andy hadn't had Exodus and Magneto on his team, if it had been Exodus and Magneto against one another, I would have picked Magneto hands down. No questions asked. Doctor Strange, this one's a little trickier because mainly I'm the only reason I say this is because Doctor Strange is always with a group of people when he's taking down somebody. He's always with the Defenders. He's always with the Avengers. He is never really by himself when he's taking down a big bad. So I can't really tell what he can do on his own. Yes, I know he's a powerful mage. Yes, I know he can do all of those things. But ultimately, I mean, I would put him really even with Exodus and or maybe even Magneto. I could be convinced to push him up a little bit. But for the most part, he's a magician. And while a magician is the most powerful magician, I think, in the Marvel universe. But there again, I just don't think in the end that he can take down somebody like Exodus. I think, and I'm falling back on an earlier argument where we had Magneto versus Doctor Strange, and I just think I voted back then for Magneto, and I would still vote for Magneto. I think he's more powerful than Doctor Strange. So, and finally, I put Scarlet Witch mainly because her most recent power of reality warping and all of that and all of the stuff that happened as a result of House of M and Disassembled was an effect of this life force or whatever it was that was kind of controlling her. And so she no longer has that. She's put back down to kind of her regular self before Disassembled and all of those things. So she's definitely not more powerful than Doctor Strange. And I think Exodus could take her out. I mean, she's pretty fractured mentally anyway, so I think she'd be pretty vulnerable to any telepathic fight or attack. So Scarlet Witch is at the bottom of the list. But there again, all five of these folks supersede all of the characters that we've ranked so far. So that part was easy. So, mm-hmm.
So yeah, anyway. I agree. I put them above all the characters we've ranked so far as well.
Yeah.
My list is it's different than Jeff's, but after listening to Jeff, I think I might be willing to change mine a bit. I'll read the original order that I had them in, and then me and Jeff will talk outside of the show, and we'll re-rate these guys a little bit maybe. Yeah. My first pick on here is Exodus. I put him as number one. I've got a real love affair with Exodus. I got to be honest with you.
Number one,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. I think Exodus pounds all these guys. He's if DC characters were telepathic, he's a DC character. Do you know what I mean? Like he's one of these guys. He's got every single power you could possibly have. And in a in an omega way as well, not just, you know, not just not in a mimic kind of way, more in a, you know, he can teleport, he's telepathic, he's telekinetic, he's immortal, he's just got everything going for him. So I have Exodus as number one. I think he beats all these guys. I actually had Scarlet Witch as number two. And I realized that Scarlet Witch has, you know, as she's come back now, she's not quite the reality warper that she used to be, but she still does control reality. And we saw that in, was it New Avengers this week that she was in? I can't remember. She was in one of the books this week. I think it was New Avengers. And, you know, basically nobody could touch her. Anybody that shot anything at her, that fired anything at her, anything that was happening, nobody could touch Scarlet Witch. And I think you're going to see that. I think she just, her head's not in the game right now. That's absolutely true. She's all over the place. She's a mess. And I think Marvel will always, till the day I die, write Scarlet Witch as a bit of a psychological disaster. But I still see her as more powerful than the rest of these guys. And also, I don't see, after what happened with Magneto and Scarlet Witch in House of M, I don't see Magneto being able to do anything to Scarlet Witch anymore. I think he's resigned himself to the fact that he's messed up his kids enough that it doesn't matter. He would just drop down to his knees and say, go ahead, kill me. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't think he'd ever allow anything to happen to Scarlet Witch ever again. Which is why I put Magneto as third after Exodus and Scarlet Witch. Magneto's super powerful, no question, though, getting old. I think Exodus could take him down. My fourth is Doctor Strange. I think Doctor Strange, even though he's not the Sorcerer Supreme by label, I believe he's still the Sorcerer Supreme. And, you know, again, really powerful. He still has the Crimson Bands of Sidorak or whatever they're called, and he's got a lot of magic at his disposal. Mr. Sinister, I put as the bottom here. I think he's very powerful, but I think Mr. Sinister, the thing with him is ultimately he's such a narcissist that he's one of those guys, he doesn't want any harm to come to himself. Even though it's really hard to harm Sinister, he's a fleer. Like, he's the kind of guy, he's up and he's getting out of that fight. And mostly because he feels that he's too important to die, or too important to be harmed in a fight. So at the first second that it looks like he's going to go down, the thing with Mr. Sinister, he's out of there, right? Because he knows he's going to live to fight another day, like most classic villains. So I'm Exodus, Scarlet Witch, Magneto, Doctor Strange, Mr. Sinister.
Yeah, and I would agree with you about Sinister, except for the recent appearance of him and the fact that he didn't really he didn't flee, but he just didn't care if somebody if Hope shot him in square in the forehead, because he could just create all of these duplicates of himself, and he was all over the place. So
yeah, but is that Sinister, or is that Kieran Gillen as just a horrible ass writer?
Well, it is. It is Kieran Gillen, but I mean, I'm assuming that we're talking about current continuity. So while I would not necessarily have put Sinister as high up as I did before that arc, I just, I had to kind of put him there. So
here, let me test your knowledge for a second.
Okay.
What was Sinister's appearance, his last appearance? And I could be wrong here, but I don't think so. What was his last appearance before that Kieran Gillen atrocity?
He was in a Matt Fraction X-Men book.
Do you remember what happened to him there?
The only thing I can remember was Greg Land drew it.
Because it wasn't his last appearance before that was when Rogue snapped his neck.
Okay.
Do you remember that?
In Messiah Complex.
Yeah.
Was that what it was?
When Rogue sat up on the table, grabbed him, and just snapped his neck. Right? And I was like, oh, okay.
Oh, right. Well, that's true.
And I know he's fine. He's going to come back somewhere else. But
right, right.
Do you know what I mean? Like, all I can say is nobody's snapping Exodus's neck. You know what I mean? Like,
there's nobody
snapping Exodus's neck. He had he had like four teams piled on top of his back, and nobody's snapping his neck.
Right.
You know, and it's same with Magneto, right? Same thing. Nobody's snapping Magneto's neck. Like,
right.
So I see Sinister's super powerful, but I just see he's got other motives. You know what I mean? Like, his motives aren't to fight. His motives are.
I agree. But I would definitely, I would have to put him above Doctor Strange, because even Doctor Strange, even in this Norman Osborn recent arc of New Avengers, I mean, Doctor Strange is getting beat up left and right by Dark Avengers. I mean, yeah. if he was that power, if he was as powerful as he claims to be, and I would say that he is also, you know, even though he's not titled the Sorcerer Supreme, he pretty much is. Why is he? I mean, you know, why is he getting his ass handed to him in every other issue of New Avengers? I mean, it just seems like that whole team just gets beat up constantly, and by Norman Osborn or whoever, and yet they have Doctor Strange on their team. So that's why, to me, Strange, you know, doesn't really qualify. You know, maybe in the past he's been more powerful, but. Well, Dan, what do you think? What would be your list?
I didn't put too much thought into it, but my initial thought would be to, well, basically have them as Ian listed them on the form. So it would be Magneto, Exodus, Sinister, Wanda, and then Doctor Strange for me. It is a tough one to rank, because each in their own right have, you know, different powers. And it's a good point about Sinister. He is a Fleer. Like, his powers are essentially defensive, and he hardly ever does the dirty work himself. So, yeah.
Yeah, but one could say that that's just being a smart tactician, you know.
True. But if he was, I don't know, if he was really powerful, he'd show it.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, and he did.
I don't know.
Like
recently.
Like Exodus.
Well, right. And like I said, Exodus, you know, very ballsy, just shows up at the Jean Grey school and says, you know, I'm here to basically unify all mutants, and by doing that, I'm going to kill all of you. I wouldn't doubt that. So Exodus is pretty powerful. So, So we'll kind of. So I updated there the rankings there for you, Ian, and as they stand now. So basically, last week I took the top four of last week, which was Magic, Satana, Wiccan, and Son of Satan, and put them at the top of the list, and then Nico was all the way down at the bottom. So. That after our conversation, that's pretty much how we did that. So,
nice.
Yeah. So anyway, all right. So that about wraps it up, guys. So thanks everybody for listening to episode number 25 of COC Live. Of course, go to comicattack.net to the forums, comicattack.former.com under COC to vote for who you think is the most deserving to win tonight's fight. If you have any questions that you would like to answer, that you would like answered on the show, go to the thread called Ask the COCers. That's where Moses went and gave his question, and you can send it there. I just want to mention Moses also sent us an email that was pretty funny. It was a video, and we should probably put it on the forums just because it's hilarious. But there's this guy who was arrested in Canada. He's a Canadian guy arrested, and this is like the video of him in the back seat of the cop car, and he basically
Bohemian Rhapsody.
Yeah, the Bohemian Rhapsody guy. Yeah. Exactly. He sings the entire Bohemian Rhapsody, and he's just awesome. It was just great. And Moses, who's also a police officer in Atlanta, mentioned that you know, if we had those kind of criminals in Georgia, then, you know, we'd be doing pretty well. It sounds like the crime scene in Canada is pretty nice if you got guys like that who are just singing Bohemian Rhapsody. So.
I thought Moses was just hinting towards the fact that I'm always drunk.
Well, there is that. Well, what he also said in the email was the term "drunk Canadian" is redundant. So, But yeah. So anyway, so send us your email or your questions on the thread. We would love to see millions of people arguing the fights in the forum. So please feel free to post what your opinion are. We had a lot of people, a lot of new people who posted in last week's fight. So that was great. Keep up the good work, everybody. Also look for us on Twitter at COC Comic Attack, and follow us there. And you can also go to Facebook and look us up on the thread, on Facebook at COC Podcast. So, yeah.
Yeah, lots of new people liking us on Facebook, too, I've noticed. I've been getting some email notifications about new followers on Facebook, which I thought, oh, that's cool, too.
Yeah, definitely.
So we record every Sunday evening at 9 p.m. Eastern Time. So be sure to get your votes in before then. And after some top-notch editing work by Jeff, as always, the fight's going to be posted and ready for listening, usually even before the following Tuesday.
I don't want to jinx it before we end the show, but did you guys notice that there was no – we went a solid hour and 30 minutes without any blips or cutting out or anything?
I noticed that. I didn't want to say anything, but I noticed that.
I know. So this week's editing is going to be really quick and nice. So I'm excited about that. Yeah.
Nice.
And I'll try and have that fight card for you.
Oh yeah. If you want, if you're on our Facebook page, you'll see that there are some really awesome show cards that Dan has been making for us. So go and check those out. They show whoever the fighters are and the environment that they're in, and it's just really cool. So yeah, so check us out. Anything else you guys got? I guess not.
C2E2.
Dan's going to C2E2. When is that?
Extremely excited. I'm leaving next Saturday or Sunday. I'm not sure yet, and I'll be gone. So the actual show is on the, I forget, it's the third weekend of April. So like 14, 15, somewhere around there, right, of April.
Very cool. And so you won't be back on this show for about 1, 2, 3 more weeks. And
yeah.
But you'll have to let us know how C2E2 was. And you're also going to be a guest on another podcast, I heard. You want to say something
about
that?
Correct. The next episode of Tales from the Water Cooler. I was invited to come on and guest. So that should be fun. Looking forward to it.
That's exciting. Very cool. Very, very cool. Well, all right. Well, from all of us at COC Live, we give everybody thanks for joining us, and we'll talk to you next week.
Let's get ready to...